and welcome to the Buyer Insights Podcast, a show about how and why people buy. I'm your host, Liston Witherell, CEO of GoodFunnel, a digital marketing agency. You can check us out on the web at www.goodfunnel.co. You can listen to all episodes of the Buyer Insights Podcast at goodfunnel.co/podcast, and you can grab the show notes from this episode there too. Today, I'm excited to have a personal friend of mine and a very successful podcaster named Andrew Warner, and he runs a podcast called Mixergy. Andrew not only is a successful podcaster, creating interviews with literally thousands now of entrepreneurs and courses to walk you through how to do particular things in your business, like adjusting sales, increasing your marketing reach, organizing your business, creating systems, hiring, the list goes on and on. But Andrew is also a successful business person himself. And so he brings a lot of insight about both sides of his business, working with his members and listeners, as well as the advertisers. And I think he's going to give you some great insights as to how to really pay attention and also be honest about where are some of the places where he could be doing a better job. So I think you're really going to love this episode. And without further ado, here's Andrew. This is Liston with the Buyer Insights Podcast. I'm here with Andrew Warner. Andrew, how are you today?
Doing great.
And Andrew, we met a couple years ago, and you run a very popular, successful podcast called Mixergy.
Yeah.
Can you tell the audience a little bit about how you got into that and maybe what you did before?
You know, when I was growing up, I hated school, even though I was in a really good business school, NYU in New York. What I loved better than that was hearing my boss teach me about business, teach me about how he figured out how to make a sale, teach me how he figured out how to start his company. And my vision for my life was always to find a way to learn from people like him, people who are doing it, and not people like my professors. And so the way I started Mixergy was I started interviewing people who were building companies. At the time, I was running these events, and some people who were creating interesting companies were coming to those events, and I started interviewing them and publishing it. And the interviews, I think, did a lot. And for years, we did really well with them. But when it was time to sell, I said to my audience, I don't know what to sell you guys. I don't yet know what's going to work. I'd like to experiment in public. And so I did this thing where I called it Testing Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, I test selling something else. And I would test by creating it, by selling it on Tuesday, seeing what the sales numbers look like, and then talking to people who bought it to see what they thought. And that essentially is how I figured out that courses were the best product for our audience. We were going to actually create courses taught by real entrepreneurs for real entrepreneurs. And that's the evolution of Mixergy, and that's where we are today.
And now the courses, you do have some courses that are for sale individually, but you also have courses that are just kind of gated, right? So if I buy a Mixergy membership, then I would have access to those.
So actually, we shifted to everything being part of a membership. If you're a member, you get access to all of it all at once. And the reason I did that is that there's this belief that we're all one course away from changing our lives forever and having everything we ever wanted. And that seems to be the model that works. Sell that one course for a couple of $1,000s to as many people as you can. But of course, there's no single course that will do that. And so I realized that to even sell our courses individually and make any kind of promise that that's going to be the biggest change ever is just not right. I'd much rather say, look, this course will have deep impact, but I think you're going to want more. And so I'm going to sell you this package of all of them and you can leave anytime. And so we have over 150 courses for under $50 or about, when I say under $50, probably like a few pennies under $50, I should say for $50. And that's the way it is. No couple of thousand to get one big thing, but a couple of bucks to get you a lot of courses taught by real entrepreneurs.
So one thing that I think is really interesting about Mixergy is essentially you're a media company, right? You talked about how many courses you have. You're in the business of producing tons and tons of really valuable content with experienced people, which means your business is very similar to, say, the New York Times. You have...
In some ways, we are. But I actually think that the New York Times, they're in a league of their own. But other media properties, I think, are making a mistake. I don't think the world needs more news. I don't think the world needs more of that. I think what we want is more superpowers. That it's interesting to see the New York Times take on the elections and the president and all that. I don't need every newspaper in the country to do it, and I don't need more newspapers doing it. What I would like is superpowers. I'd like to read things that then I can use right away. I saw that one of your recent guests recommended Robert Cialdini's book, Influence. At the end of reading Influence, you have some superpowers. You know how to influence people. Lots of entrepreneurs have used what they learned in that book. That's what I think we want. That, I think, is what the media should be about. And then when they get to that level, people will pay, as opposed to just asking for free and being willing to put up with ads because they have ad blockers. I don't think that model of media works.
Mm-hmm. And so in your business, you have people who advertise with you. And you have people who listen to the podcast, which yeah. really provide a lot of the value to the advertisers, obviously. So,
advertising is a very small portion of our business. It definitely is something worth talking about because it's growing and it's significant, but it's a small portion of the business. It really is, and it's important for me that we always become a company where the customer is the listener, where the listener pays, because otherwise my goal is to please the advertiser. I want to think every day about how I can please my customers, my audience, the people who are learning and building their companies.
Oh, and so the majority of the revenue from Mixergy is from paying listeners.
Yep. And for a long time, I neglected advertising completely. I mean, listen, mm-hmm. we were selling ads for $2,000 a month for a podcast that was the best and for a long time, the number one podcast for entrepreneurs. The only mm-hmm. one, actually, for a long time. And the reason I did it is because I didn't care. I didn't even want that revenue. I would have given up that whole revenue source completely, except I interviewed a woman who created content and Hadley. I hope I'm...
Oh, sure. Marketing Profs?
Yeah, exactly. Uh-huh. I interviewed her about it, and she said that, look, what we do is create membership sites, but we also want advertising because we want to diversify our revenue. And I said, all right, since she's telling me to do it, I will keep that advertising up. And there was a period in my life where I had all my eggs in one basket revenue-wise, and it hurt when that one basket was damaged. And so I said, I'm going to allow myself to have ad revenue too. But I neglected it. $2,000 a month was nothing. It wasn't until someone came to me, Sachit Gupta, a guy who I'd known for a long time, who said, look, you're underpricing it and I want to take it over. And I said, mm-hmm. I can't help you with it because I don't want you to help me with it. He said, I want to take it over completely. Let me show you what we can do with selling ads on Mixergy, and all you have to do is approve it. And I said, okay. And he took it over. And frankly, I said, Sachit, I don't even need to approve it because you know me well enough that you'll not run any junk. And I know you well enough that you're not going to run anything I wouldn't agree with. I said, okay, but I still want to run it by you. And so he took over the ads and grew revenue. And we could talk about what he did. But my heart is in my audience and making something that they would pay for.
Yeah, so let's focus there. So one of the challenges that I think one of the unique challenges is you have lots and lots of listeners, right? Tens of thousands of people who are listening. And they have a diversity of wants and needs. Of course, you have a target persona you're trying to please, but how do you take, first of all, collect feedback from them to get an understanding of why they're buying or not buying? And then how do you kind of organize it and make sense out of it?
There are a few things that I do. And I think we always could do a much better job at that because you're right. There's over 150 courses on the site and they cover so many topics that it's not unusual to have somebody sign up because they have an established company, lots of customers, and they want one extra tip for someone who does their ad buying. And so they might buy it just to get the course on ad buying so they can hand it over to one of their employees versus someone else who's coming in and just getting started and they want the course that helps them understand how to get started. And that is a problem and always has been for us, that it's just such a wide group of people with a wide group of interests. What we did a while back was say, when you sign up, whether it's for the email or for the paid product, we have a lot. We tell the person who's signing up, we have a lot of courses and interviews here. We want to help you find the right one. Tell us what challenges you're going through right now, and then we will pick the perfect interview for you or as close to perfect as we can get. And by having people fill those forms out, they're just like hit a couple of drop downs, before they get the interview that we recommend, we get a sense of why they're there and what they're going through. And it's actually, it varies. We change it a lot. It's not just drop downs though. It might be something like, what's your biggest challenge right now? And it's, I don't know how to grow my sales, or I'm trying to figure out how to start a business, or I'm trying to get more people to come to my site, et cetera. Once they do that, once they hit that drop down, there's a follow up question often that says, describe that problem with more detail so we can find the right interview. They describe it, then we redirect them automatically to what we think is the best interview. But we also get an email with that request, so someone else on the team could say, actually, we could do better than the automatic system, and we fire off another email with a recommendation for an interview or a course. So that's one way we do it. Another thing that we do is I actually do events in person, very small ones, things like Scotch Night, where I'll have two or three entrepreneurs together over a drink just for a quiet conversation. And that helps me understand the real issues they're going through, the kind of things that you wouldn't put in a form. And that helps inform what we do. The final thing I think that helps is actually, we also do customer service email, which helps a lot. And then the final thing is me getting on a call with members. And I wish I could do more of that. And I try to do that as often as possible.
And then with all of this feedback you gather, do you just kind of intuitively sift through it and say, okay, my gut tells me that this is the next big issue? Because one thing we often see is there's a little bit of a confirmation bias. I think this is the main problem and I keep hearing it, so therefore I'm going to focus on that. But then also, as new problems pop up or maybe your customer base starts to slightly change, you're going to get some hints at it from a smaller population of people, but you should probably still respond to it, because at the beginning of the trend, it just looks like noise, right? But over time, you're going to start to see, oh, this is something I should really be focused on. Do you have any insight as to how you deal with that?
I think we do. We are slower at picking up on it than I would like. Mm-hmm. I just interviewed the founder of Drip, Rob Walling. And I said, when I first talked to you, your whole thing was just a little pop-up that asked people for their email address. How did you become a competitor to Infusionsoft with this whole marketing automation bit? And he said, Andrew, that's all I wanted to do was that little thing that you saw. It helped us grow our email list, and so that's what I created. Then I created it for other people and sold it as a product, and I thought I'd just stay in that business. But people kept telling me, I don't want it. And they kept saying to me, this is what Rob told me, I want a better email system. I don't want to hook into Infusionsoft. Infusionsoft is just a pain. I want you to create something better. And he heard it so much from people who were willing to cancel over that he finally had to listen. Same thing happens to us at Mixergy, that I unfortunately take longer than I should. So the app is a really good example of it. People kept telling me, I signed up because I want to take these courses. I then have to watch the courses on my computer. I don't want to watch it on my computer. I want to download it. So I think, all right, this is one person. Most people watch it on their computer. I don't know that we can solve the problem for this one person. We'll manually solve it for this one person, but we can't solve it. We can't create a solution for that person. Then we'll hear it more and more, and we did hear it more and more. And then, frankly, the mistake that we made was we said, all right, we don't want to get in the app business. It's too hard to keep updating an app. We don't want to compete with the apps that already exist. Let's make it easy for people to transfer our courses to whatever app they already like. So if they like a podcast app, let's just pop it in there. If they like Dropbox, let's just send it to their Dropbox. Whatever it is that already works for them, let's use that. And so we kept creating these little hook-ins to other people's products. And it was a pain to do, but I kept insisting on it. And the guy who did it would create it, and it would kind of work, and then people would be confused, and then I'd tell him improve it, and he'd improve it, but really what they wanted was an easier way to download the courses and interviews. And so finally, I've been working with this developer, and Michael said, I have no work to do right now. What do you want me to work on? And I said, I don't know, maybe nothing. And he said, Andrew, what I would really like to do is create an app for you. And he said, let me have 2 to 3 months and I'll create it. And I know we can have it working. And here's the price. I forget what it was, but it wasn't very expensive. I said, all right, let's do it. Mm-hmm. And I thought when we launched it, no one would care, but I just kind of get to show Michael, that's it. No one cares. Let's move on. And the truth is, it didn't set the world on fire, but it did help our members a lot. It set the world on fire for some members, people who were just looking for an easy way to download the courses, an easy way to get the interviews for their commutes, who didn't want to have to deal with a podcast app integration with our site. And so you're right. We listen and it takes too long. It was the number one complaint by members. The number one complaint by members.
Now, just to be clear, Andrew, I wasn't making any accusations about how long you took.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way for you to have known it, but you're absolutely right. Your understanding of the problem summed up exactly how we experienced it internally. And that's not the only place where we experienced it.
Sure.
Here's another one where we were really slow. People kept asking for a community, a forum. For years, they said it. And for years, I said, we have nothing to talk about. I don't want to do it. I don't think we should have a place where people just happen to talk because they happen to be members. And then I finally created it, and it made sense. And I wish I'd done it sooner. And now I need to keep improving it because I see that people want it, and I see why.
And so going back to your app for a second, one way that I might interpret or leverage the data that you get back from the app is an early indication of how many like deeply passionate, engaged people you have would be how many apps downloads did you have, say, in the first week? Were you able to take some of that data and say, wow, actually, people are much more engaged than I thought? Because granted, you didn't set the world on fire, nor should you expect to with one of, 9 billion apps or however, there's probably more apps than people on Earth now.
Feels like it.
Right. But it does give you an indication of how invested people are in what you're doing.
It does. I'd never even thought to look at download numbers. I probably should. I should see how many members are logging in. That would be a good indicator. Let me ask Michael right now. I'll email him.
You should.
Michael, how numbers on the app? ? Hey, how many members are logging into the app? I want to see if it's actually getting used by members. Cool. And if non-members use it, it's a nice bonus. But the real people who I wanted to address with this are members who are paying, who are trying to download something and needed an easier way to do it.
Well, I'm glad I could potentially convey some value to you in this interview as well.
Yeah, I got a lot out of this interview already.
Going back to you said you've really undertaken two giant projects. One is launching the forums where people can communicate and share their experiences with other entrepreneurs or people in the Mixergy community, as well as the app. Have you noticed a difference in your ability to sell Mixergy memberships as a result of giving this additional value that people had been asking for?
I think it's the kind of thing that you don't realize you need until you're a member. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong about it, but I think that what happens is people don't think of how am I going to get it to my phone. Don't even think about getting it on their phone. Just assume that everything's going to work. They sign up and then they have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe it'll be reflected in LTV over time then.
That actually is where I'd like to see it reflected. And I'm actually just going to log into Stripe right now as we're talking to just confirm my expectations there.
Very good. You know, I actually just got a business coach, which I would highly recommend because at first I thought this is silly, but these types of things, him asking like, hey, dumb question, right? Mm-hmm. And you continue to evaluate your business as a result of it. So if we could, I'd like to talk briefly about the advertisers. I know your focus is definitely the listener, but if we could talk about advertisers, one thing that you mentioned in the pre-interview is you don't focus as much on CPM, which is the typical model. I'm going to pay per 1,000 listeners. How are you able to go away from that? And what has your experience been?
Yeah. The problem with the CPM is take one of my sponsors, a company called TopTal. They help businesses hire developers. We're not talking about a $10 item. We're talking about a multi-$1,000 commitment.
Sure.
So imagine they go to an entrepreneurship podcast that has, let's say, a million, let's just say a billion listeners. They pay whatever price they pay. It doesn't matter if those billion people haven't fully started their companies, but they happen to just want to start their companies and they're listening to that podcast. That's a big mistake versus having, let's say, 200 people who are all not just people who started their companies, but actually are listening because they're looking for hiring ideas, Right? That's a much better audience than the billion people who are listening who have no business for top talent. And so I think audience numbers are a bad indicator of what an advertiser should pay. It's much better to say, here's our audience. We think they're more valuable because, and explain to the customer that we think they're more valuable because they have actual companies. We think they're more valuable because they're actually engaged. We think they're more valuable because they have trust in Mixergy. Mm-hmm. And that they're at a point in their world, in their day, where they're thinking about business. And we know we can deliver the results for you. We want to charge more than you might pay per 1,000 people somewhere else, because we know that you're going to actually get results. In fact, we don't even want to charge based on how many people are listening. We want to charge based on the value of the audience, value of the ad. And so this is something I've always wanted to do. And when Sachit Gupta came and said, I want to sell your ads, that was his approach too. And he just approached advertisers and said, look, you know our reputation. We're not going to screw you. We think that this is going to be helpful for you. Would you take a shot on us? And at first, he wasn't even sure who to pitch. And then he realized, well, actually, frankly, he talked to Sam Parr of HustleCon. Mm-hmm. And he said, who's paying for this? Who do you think I should talk to? And Sam said, look, recruiters are big advertisers for the tech community. And then he gave him a couple of other people. And so Sachit said, all right, if recruiters are paying a lot, it means that they're earning a lot of money. Let's see what we can do by talking to recruiters. And he started talking to recruiters, and TopTal was in line with who we'd want to be associated with. And so we started working with them. But if it didn't work out, we'd have to acknowledge it. You know, if he was charging a price that we thought we were worth and the world told us it actually isn't worth that, we'd have to acknowledge it, because people would say, we're not going to buy any more from you. Or they would say, we want a refund. And the confirmation we got that we were on the right track was advertisers were actually trying to lock in multi-month agreements. So TopTal and the other sponsors, I don't want to start listing all my sponsors here, but they started booking multi-month deals with us, and they would want to book even into 2017. Midway through 2016, they wanted to book through 2017. And so we said, all right, we're actually not underpricing. We're not being too arrogant with the price we want. I think that's actually the way everyone should price, based on results, based on the value, as opposed to per 1,000 people.
Agreed, because what the advertiser is really looking for is access to a subset of any given audience, right? They say, my perfect customer looks like this,
right?
And my product is perfect for them for this reason. And so if you have a higher percentage, even though you have a smaller audience, but say 80% of your audience is exactly in their wheelhouse, of course they should pay more. For what
you know what? Out. Not every advertiser wants it. So FreshBooks, my very first sponsor, does not want to buy ads from us. Mm-hmm. They don't want this kind of deal. And so they told us what their CPM was, and they hadn't been willing to budge, and so we couldn't work with them. And I like FreshBooks. I know I could sell FreshBooks. I use FreshBooks. I think they're fantastic, but I can't. I had their founder on to do an interview with me. At the end of the interview, he said, look, I know you get our business. We should be sponsoring you. I said, all right. I emailed him. He forwarded the email to someone else on his team. He wants the ad. He knows it's going to be effective, but the person on the team doesn't want to budge from there. They have a process that works. So when Sacha talked to that person, we weren't able to get them to shift away from their CPM worldview. Not everyone's willing to go along with it. Some people just have their frameworks and they just want the framework.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, exactly. People have their model and they stick to it. They want to go with what works.
It's really hard, yeah.
Right. Okay. And have you had any other experiences that maybe gave you a new insight into what advertisers need or want in order to deliver them more value?
You know, one of the things that I discovered was years ago, the founder of 99 Designs, I'd known him for a long time, said, Andrew, we want to sponsor, so he sponsored. And then he came back and said, Andrew, we need to measure success in these ads. I want you to say, not go to 99designs.com, but send people to 99designs.com/Mixergy. And I said, I actually don't think that's a good idea. I think people, when they're listening to podcasts, don't want to have to remember a slash anything. They just want to remember the name of the company. And they're not going to remember to type in the slash. I said, I'll try it. And I tried it for a couple of ads, but then I stopped. And then he kept coming back to me because we're friends. Instead of canceling, he said, Andrew, I think you should do this lash. I think you should actually give people a discount code, do something like that. And ultimately, I didn't. And I didn't listen to him. And I lost him as a sponsor. And I said, that's actually my position. I don't think that makes sense. And I was okay with losing him. But what I didn't realize was that he was right. We eventually did shift to that. And people were willing to remember the name of the sponsor and slash, and that's the direction we went in. When I finally came to that conclusion, I went to one of my sponsors, Scott Walker. He runs a law firm here in San Francisco. And I said, Scott, I could do Scott at walkercorporatelaw.com/mixergy, and then you can keep track of how many people are coming in. And he insisted on not doing that. He said, I don't want that. I think people are not going to remember the Walker Corporate Law Group already. And so we do have to listen to each one individually and understand that they don't all have the same worldview.
Yeah, it's not a slam dunk every time, is it?
No, not for something like that. It really is. It's an expensive product, and so people want it customized. I'll give you another example. I want to give people a URL. TopTal says, actually, this is such a personal relationship. If Andrew would give his email address in the ad, that would actually help us. And then anyone who signs up or anyone who wants to be introduced to TopTal and then sign up, Andrew could make the introduction and we'll take over. I thought, all right, let's try it. And so we did it. At first, I thought they meant they're going to give me an andrew@toptal.com email address. And then I realized, no, they actually want it to be fully me. And I said, all right, let's give it a shot. And we did it.
And I hope you charge more for that.
I did not.
Oh, Andrew.
And strangely, and it's not that much work. I know the guy who I'd be introducing them to. It's Graham. Okay. Graham and I. Graham invited me to stay at his house because we've known each other now for a while. So making an introduction to Graham and knowing that they'll be taken care of is easy. And it turns out people didn't just email me more with junk just because I said that. So it was an easy yes. Mm.
Very interesting. Well, Andrew, you've shared a lot about your experience with Mixergy and your experience with both your advertisers and your listeners. Now I've got three standard questions for you. And the first is, what is the biggest mistake that you see people make in learning about their customers? And feel free to draw on the experience of entrepreneurs you've interviewed also.
I'll tell you my experience. When people signed up to Mixergy Premium, our monthly package at first, I was so excited but also intimidated that I jumped for joy. I celebrated them. I was appreciative. And I showed my wife the PayPal order, but I didn't call them up. I wish I'd set up a call with each one of them to learn about them, to find out who they were, to talk to them. And I just was too intimidated to talk to them. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to talk to more of our customers.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think I know your answer to this question. What is the one thing everyone can do today to learn more about their customers?
So since you can intuit from that answer what my answer would be, which is to call them. Let me give you another one. Another one is to actually find a way to get together with them in person. I make a really big point of saying if anyone's listening to me or if they signed up, they should come to Mixergy's office for a scotch or for a visit. And next week, I think I've got two people who are coming in. I think I learn a lot from seeing them in person. It's a little intimidating to get together with someone. I think it's too valuable to miss. And so I'd suggest doing that. Find a way to meet them in person.
Mm-hmm. And what is the one book you recommend besides your own? Well, you don't have a book besides your courses. Right.
I was going to recommend Influence, but I saw that it had already been recommended. So I'm going to recommend one that I don't think any of your other interviewees are going to recommend. It's a book called The Real Deal by James Caan. This is a guy who changed his name to the same name as the actor James Caan because he was so insecure about his Pakistani background.
Okay.
But it also shows how much of a hustler he was, that he was willing to take on an American name in order to make it in the UK. He then kept growing his business using such scrappy means, like renting a closet. I think it was literally a closet in the best building he could afford, just so when he met a client, he could kind of come down in the elevator and say, you know what, it's a little too busy upstairs, let's go out for coffee. But they could meet him at least in the lobby of his building. Their book is full of tons of scrappy ideas like that. And I actually would recommend it as an audiobook because he reads it and he's a you get his personality and his fieriness in there. And so if you're looking for creative ideas, there's nothing like seeing someone who's willing to think creatively and be scrappy like that to help you think more like that. You know what? I'll just say one more thing on this. When I was in high school, I was assigned Shakespeare all the time. And I hated reading Shakespeare. I hated it, but I had to. So what I would do is I'd get the audio version. And by the end of the second hour of listening to it, I was starting in my head to speak like a Shakespearean actor. Wherefore art thou? You know? And I think that that's one of the benefits of listening to James Caan. In your head, you're going to start to think and speak in those kind of creative hustler ways that you could be proud of. We're not talking about breaking laws or anything. We're talking about the creative solutions to problems that most people just ignore because they accept his limitations. He recognized the options and he recognized the obstacles and found interesting ways to deal with them.
Love it. Well, you've piqued my interest. I'm actually going to go download that on Audible right now. So you've been really generous about sharing your experience, but in case they want to get a hold of you, where can people find you? What's the best way to connect?
I think if they go to Mixergy and sign up, they can see our flow at the moment, and then they could hit reply and chat with me on any one of our emails.
Okay. Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
And of course, anyone who happens to be in San Francisco, I'll say this. We are right at 201 Mission Street in San Francisco. Let me know before you come here, especially since we just had a baby, my wife and I did, and I can't get together as quickly as I could before. So let me know before you come, and hopefully we'll get together in person.
And I'll corroborate that story for anybody who doubts what Andrew is saying right now. This is actually how we met initially, is you or one of your assistants reached out to me and said, would you like to have scotch with Andrew? To which, of course, I said, yes, and I bought you a bottle of scotch.
Yeah, I think I was looking unreportive and saw that you happened to be in the area, and then you bought a great bottle of scotch, and then from there, we started kind of hanging out and we went poolside once, didn't we?
We did, yeah, in Novato.
Yeah, I love that area. It was Petaluma.
Petaluma, there you Petaluma. Go. Yeah. Right, it's been that long since I've been in the Bay Area, I guess. Cool, well, thank you so much for being here, Andrew. I really appreciate it, and people can find you on Mixergy. So thanks for being here and sharing.
Yeah.